We are honored today to have as our devotional speaker Elder Ezra Taft Benson of the Council of the Twelve. Elder Benson is a member of the Board of Trustees of Brigham Young University. He is married to Flora Smith Amason, and they are the parents of six children. We are pleased to have Sister Benson sitting beside Elder Benson on the stand today, and we honor her. Elder Benson has served as a member of the Council of the Twelve for some 30 years now, having been appointed in October of 1943. During the years 1953 to 61, he served as the United States Secretary of Agriculture under President Dwight D. Eisenhower. He was given a leave of absence as a general authority during this time. He also served twice as President of the European Mission, and was later appointed supervisor of church work in the Asian countries. He was responsible for the reorganization of the work in the church in 14 European countries. During this time, he supervised the distribution of food, clothing, and other supplies through the church welfare program. Elder Benson helped organize the Idaho Cooperative Council and served as its secretary from 1933 to 38. He also served as the executive secretary of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives. Elder Benson graduated with honors from Brigham Young University and received his master's degree in agricultural economics from Iowa State University. He also did graduate work at the University of California. He has received 11 honorary degrees, including Brigham Young University's Distinguished Service Award in 1950. An honorary Doctor of Science degree from Rutgers University in 1955, and an honorary Doctor of Public Service degree at Brigham Young University in 1955. Here's a man who has served his fellow man, the church, and our Father in Heaven with great ability and distinction over the years. A humble man of God, and it is our privilege to have him as our speaker today, and we turn the time now to you, Elder Ezra Taft Benson of the Council of the Twelve.
Humbly and gratefully, I stand before you this morning, humbled by the responsibility which is mine as I face this choice audience, and grateful for this great and unique institution founded by a prophet of God. As an introduction to what I trust the Lord will be pleased to have me say today, I quote a short paragraph from a memorable prayer given at the dedication of the London Temple by President David O. McKay. Quote, "Next to life, we express gratitude for the gift of free agency. When thou didst create man, thou placed within him part of thine omnipotence and bade him choose for himself. Liberty and conscience thus became a sacred part of human nature. Freedom not only to think, but to speak and act is a God-given privilege." Unquote. As a further introduction, I quote from another beloved leader for whom our newest college on this campus is named, President J. Reuben Clark, Jr. Quote, "The Constitution of the United States is a great and treasured part of my religion. The overturning or the material changing or the distortion of any fundamental principle of our constitutional government would thus do violence to my religion. My faith teaches me that the Constitution is an inspired document drawn by the hands of men whom God raised up for that very purpose. And God has given his approval of the government set up under the Constitution for the rights and protection of all flesh according to just and holy principles. That the constitutional principle of freedom in maintaining rights and privileges belongs to all mankind and is justifiable before the Lord. So far as my knowledge goes, continues President Clark, this is the only government now on earth to which God has given such an approval. It is his plan for the government of free men. Unquote. Not too many miles from Boston rests a large boulder on Lexington Green. Inscribed on this rock, which I read again a short time ago, are the words which Captain Parker gave to his Minutemen on April 19, 1775, nearly 200 years ago. Stand your ground. Don't fire unless fired upon. But if they mean to have a war, let it begin here. And it began. Said Webster, they poured out their generous blood like water before they knew whether it would fertilize the land of freedom or of bondage. But they aroused their fellow Americans. Within 1 year, John Adams faced the body of men who were deliberating on whether to adopt the Declaration of Independence. With the inspiration of heaven resting on him, Adams declared, quote, sink or swim, live or die, survive or perish, I give my hand and my heart to this vote. It is true, indeed, that in the beginning we aim not at independence, but there's a divinity which shapes our ends. Why then should we defer the declaration? You and I indeed may rue it. We may not live to the time when the declaration shall be made good. We may die. Die colonists, die slaves. Die, it may be, ignominiously on the scaffold. Be it so. Be it so. If it be the pleasure of heaven that my country shall require the poor offering of my life, the victim shall be ready. But while I do live, let me have a country, or at least the hope of a country, and that a free country. But whatever may be our fate, be assured that this declaration will stand. It may cost treasure and it may cost blood, but it will stand and it will richly compensate for both. Through the thickened gloom of the present, I see the brightness of the future as the sun in heaven. We shall make this a glorious and immortal day. When we are in our graves, our children will honor it. They will celebrate it with thanksgiving, with festivity, with bonfires and illuminations. On its annual return, they will shed tears, copious, gushing tears, not of subjection and slavery, not of agony and distress, but of exultation, of gratitude and of joy. Sir, before God, I believe the hour is come. My judgment approves this measure, and my whole heart is in it. All that I have and all that I am and all that I hope in this life, I am now ready here to stake upon it. And I leave off as I began, that live or die, survive or perish, I am for the Declaration. It is my living sentiment, and by the blessing of God, it shall be my dying sentiment. Independence now, and independence forever. Unquote. Yesterday I read again, in that great current volume, Quest of a Hemisphere, by Boyle, published by Western Islands, Boston. I am grateful we now have again a textbook for our children, grandchildren, and their parents that restores that which has, in many cases, been removed from our histories by wolves in sheep's clothing. I love history books, which tell history as it was, as the Book of Mormon tells it, with the Lord in the picture, guiding and directing the affairs of the righteous, winning their battles for them. In this new history, we read again, as some of us old enough to remember, the courageous and stirring words against the Navigation Acts, the Stamp Act of 1765, and taxation without representation. In this real American history, we have the record of Washington, Jefferson, and the record of Samuel Adams of Boston, who organized committees of correspondence and groups of young men banded together as Sons of Liberty. We read again the words of James Otis, that a law was void if it violated the human rights of man. And a man who is quiet is as secure in his house as a prince in his castle. Here we read the colonists fought the threat of aggression as much as aggression itself. With grim determination, they opposed every attempt to rob them of any liberty they had gained. To the colonists, our benefactors, it was not so much the amount as the principle of taxation without representation that the colonists opposed. Here again in this new history are also the fiery words, "Give me liberty," of Patrick Henry of Virginia, and also the words, "If this be treason, make the most of it." John Hancock, George Mason, Paul Revere, John Dickinson and his letters from a farmer. Quote, "We cannot be happy without being free." The British colonies were largely settled by people who had revolted against their living conditions in other lands. They were rebels, in a sense, who had the courage to flee from want and persecution and face the perils of a wilderness to seek a better form of life. When they found a better way, they fought to keep it. Their children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren did not want any monarch to change their way of life. They had plowed their own lands, built their own homes, and made their own clothes. Who was their master? Chapter 7 closes with a discussion of freedom of the press, and these stirring words inspired by Peter Zenger, quote, "The right to print the truth is a necessary part of political liberty," unquote. And these by the famous lawyer, Andrew Hamilton from Philadelphia. "The loss of liberty to a generous mind is worse than death. The man who loves his country prefers its liberty to all other considerations, well knowing that without liberty, life is a misery," unquote. Thus, in colonial days, did the people of the colony stand firmly against any form of dictatorship. Thousands of immigrants came to the settlements along the Atlantic seaboard with only a vague idea of the freedoms they were seeking because they had not known many of them. They were pursuing a vision. Freedom sprouted in a wilderness like flowers on a vacant lot, because each person who came had broken the pattern of life in the old country, and he was starting all over again. Something new began to grow in the new world, a mere idea. People began to question the right of government to interfere with their freedom to come and go, to buy and sell, to own or lease, to talk or listen, to vote and elect. In other words, people began to think they had the right to govern themselves. Yet a new nation had to rise in the Western Hemisphere before this idea gained the force of law. And so today, on Lexington Green, you will see a sacred old monument nearing 200 years of age that covers the remains of those patriotic Minutemen. And on this monument are inscribed these words, "Sacred to liberty and the rights of mankind, the freedom and independence of America, sealed and defended with the blood of her sons," and so forth. Yes, there is much, much more on that old historic monument, including their names. Yes, their mother Gentiles, as Nephi foresaw, 2,367 years before, were gathered together upon the waters and upon the land to battle against them. And I beheld, said the prophet Nephi, that the power of God was with them, and also that the wrath of God was upon all those that were gathered together against them to battle. And I, Nephi, beheld that the Gentiles that had gone out of captivity were delivered by the power of God out of the hands of all other nations. Unquote. With Independence won, another body of men assembled, and under the inspiration of heaven, they too drafted a document. Probably the greatest instrument ever struck off at a given time by the mind of man, the Constitution of the United States. Said J. Reuben Clark, Jr., that great constitutional lawyer, the framers of the Constitution were not political tyros, beginners, flying a political kite to keep in order the henyard, that is, the colonies. They were men widely experienced in affairs of government. The Constitution was not the work of cloistered fanatical theorists, but of sober, seasoned, distinguished men of affairs, drawn from the various walks of life. They included students of wide reading and great learning in all matters of government. The Constitution was born not only of the wisdom and experience of the generation that wrought it, but also of the wisdom of the long generations that had gone before and which had been transmitted to them through tradition and the pages of history. These were the horse and buggy days, as they have been called in derision. These were the men who traveled in the horse-drawn buggies and on horseback. But these were the men who carried under their hats as they rode in the buggies and on their horses a political wisdom garnered from the ages. As giants to pygmies are they when placed alongside our political émigrés and their fellow travelers of today, who now traduce them with slighting word and contemptuous phrase. The end of quotation. If there are those who doubt President Clark's tribute to the founding fathers, then hear the words of President Wilford Woodruff. Quote, "Those men who laid the foundation of this American government and signed the Declaration of Independence were the best spirits that the God of heaven could find on the face of the earth. They were choice spirits, inspired of the Lord. Every one of those men that signed the Declaration of Independence with George Washington called upon me as an apostle of the Lord Jesus Christ in the Temple of St. George 2 consecutive nights and demanded at my hand that I should go forth and attend to the ordinances of the house of God for them. Would those spirits have called upon me as an elder in Israel to perform that work if they had not been noble spirits before God? They would not. Said they, we laid the foundation of the government you now enjoy, and we never apostatized from it, but we remained true to it and were faithful to God." Unquote. These two documents, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States, resting on the bedrock of the love of the Lord and of liberty, became the foundation of our republic. And from this foundation has come the greatest civilization on the face of the earth. James Russell Lowell was right when he said, "Our American republic will endure only as long as the ideas of the men who founded it continue dominant." What were those ideas? Well, they were in part incorporated in our Declaration of Independence and our Constitution. God grant we will all become familiar with both of these documents. And Washington covered them well when he said, of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. Reason and experience both forbid us to expect that national morality can prevail in exclusion of religious principle. It is substantially true, he continues, that virtue and morality is a necessary spring of popular government. I serve as a member of the Board of Trustees of this great university. One year we invited the late Cecil B. DeMille to speak to our student body and accept an award. I will never forget his words when he stated that men and nations cannot break the Ten Commandments. They can only break themselves upon them. And he was right. Only a moral and religious people deserve or will defend their freedom. Edmund Burke stated it well when he said, "Men are qualified for civil liberty in exact proportion to their disposition to put moral chains upon their own appetites, in proportion as their love of justice is above their rapacity, in proportion as their soundness of sobriety, of understanding, is above their vanity and presumption, in proportion as they are more disposed to listen to the counsel of the wise and the good, in preference to the flattery of knaves. Society cannot exist unless a controlling power upon the will and appetite is placed somewhere. And the less of it there is within, the more there must be without. It is ordained in the eternal constitution of things that men of intemperate minds cannot be free. Their passions forge their fetters." Unquote. As Elder Albert E. Bowen put it, self-government involves self-control, self-discipline, and acceptance of and the most unremitting obedience to correct principles. No other form of government requires so high a degree of individual morality. Unquote. I love this great nation. I have traveled and lived abroad just enough to make me appreciate rather fully what we have here. I never returned to these shores from abroad, as I have done scores of times, but what I think of the words of Scott: "Breathes there a man with soul so dead, who never to himself hath said, 'This is my own, my native land,' whose heart hath ne'er within him burned as home his footsteps he has turned from wandering on a foreign strand. If such there breeze, go mark him well," and so on. And then that great poem by Van Dyke, "America for Me." It's great to see the old world and travel up and down among the famous palaces and cities of renown, to view the crumbly castles and statues of the kings. But now I think I've seen enough of antiquated things. So it's home again and home again. America for me, I want a ship that's westward bound to plow the rolling sea, to the land of youth and freedom, beyond the ocean bars, where the air is full of freedom and the flag is full of stars. Yes, I love this nation, of which we are a part. To me, it is not just another nation, not just a member of the family of nations of the free world. It is a great and glorious nation with a divine mission, and it has been brought into being under the inspiration of heaven. It is truly a land choice above all others. I thank God for the knowledge which we have regarding the prophetic history and the spiritual foundation of this great land of America. When I contemplate the great events that have transpired here, going way back to the days of our first parents when they were placed in the Garden of Eden, and recall that this garden was here in America, that it was here also where Adam met with the body of great high priests at Adamon Diamond shortly before his death and gave them his final blessings, and that to that same spot he is to return again to meet with the leaders of his people, his children. When I contemplate, my brothers and sisters, that here in this land will be established the New Jerusalem, that here in this land will Zion be built, when I contemplate that prophets of God anciently served here in this land, and that the resurrected Christ appeared to them, and when I contemplate that the greatest of all visions, the coming of God the Father and His Son Jesus Christ to the boy prophet in our day, took place in this land, my heart fills with gratitude that I am privileged to live here, and that I have the honor and the pleasure not only serving in the church, but also of serving in the government of this great land. I consider it an honor and a privilege. I am grateful for the founding fathers of this land and for the freedom they have vouchsafed to us. I am grateful that they recognized, as great leaders of this nation have always recognized, that the freedom which we enjoy did not originate with the founding fathers. That this glorious principle, this great boon of freedom and respect for the dignity of man, came as a gift from the Creator. The founding fathers, it is true, with superb genius, welded together the safeguards of these freedoms. It was necessary, however, for them to turn to the Scriptures, to religion, in order to have their great experiment make sense to them. And so our freedom is God-given. It antedates the founding fathers. I am grateful that the God of heaven saw fit to put His stamp of approval upon the Constitution and to indicate that it had come into being through wise men whom He raised up unto this very purpose. He asked the saints, even in the dark days of their persecution and hardship, to continue to seek for redress from their enemies, according, He said, to the laws and Constitution which I have suffered or caused to be established and should be maintained for the rights and protection of all flesh. And then He made this most impressive declaration: and for this purpose have I established the Constitution of this land by the hands of wise men whom I raised up unto this very purpose and redeemed the land by the shedding of blood. It is gratifying that the constitutions in many of the other lands of our neighbors in the Americas are patterned very much after this divinely appointed constitution which the God of heaven directed in the founding of this nation. It is not any wonder, therefore, that Joseph Smith the prophet, a truly great American, referring to the Constitution, said, "It is a glorious standard. It is founded in the wisdom of God. It is a heavenly banner." President Brigham Young declared prophetically, "When the day comes in which the kingdom of God will bear rule, the flag of the United States will proudly flutter unsullied on the flagstaff of liberty and equal rights, without a spot to sully its fair surface. The glorious flag our fathers have bequeathed to us will then be unfurled to the breeze, and by those who have power to hoist it aloft and defend its sanctity." Unquote. But continuing, President Young asks, "How long will it be before the words of the prophet Joseph will be fulfilled?" He said, "If the Constitution of the United States were saved at all, it must be done by this people. It will be not many years before these words come to pass." Unquote. These words were spoken April 8, 1868. over 100 years ago. Yes, my brothers and sisters, we have a rich heritage. But may I remind you that nations oft-times sow the seeds of their own destruction, even while enjoying unprecedented prosperity, even before reaching the zenith or the peak of their power. I think history clearly indicates that this is often the case. When it appears that all is well, oft-times the very seeds of destruction are sown, sometimes unwittingly. Most of the great civilizations of the world have not been conquered from without until they have destroyed themselves from within by sowing these seeds of destruction. But it is my conviction that God does now look with favor and has looked with favor upon this government, which he established by wise men. It is also my firm conviction that his protective hand is still over the United States of America. I know, too, that if we will keep the commandments of God, live as he has directed and does now direct through his prophets, we will continue to have his protecting hand over us. But we must be true to the eternal verities, the great Christian virtues which God has revealed. Then and only then will we be safe as a nation and as individuals. God grant that the faithfulness of the Latter-day Saints will provide the balance of power to save this nation in time of crisis. How many of you heard or saw the statement regarding some of these matters which our living prophet and his counselors gave us recently? It was presented over television and appeared in the church section of the Deseret News. I quote a part of it. Said the First Presidency, "We urge members of the church and all Americans to begin now to reflect more intently on the meaning and the importance of the Constitution and of adherence to its principles. In these challenging days, when there are so many influences which would divert us, there is a need to rededicate ourselves to the lofty principles and practices of our founding fathers." Unquote. Now, my brothers and sisters, let us not let these admonitions of our living prophets fall on deaf ears. Let us, as they direct, learn the meaning and importance of our God-ordained Constitution. Let us rededicate ourselves to the lofty principles and practices of those wise men whom God raised up to give us our priceless freedom, our liberties, our salvation, our well-being as a church and as a nation depend upon it. This nation has a spiritual foundation, a prophetic history. Every true Latter-day Saint should love the United States of America, the most generous nation under heaven, the Lord's base of operations in these last days. May we do all in our power to strengthen and safeguard this base and increase our freedom. This nation will, I feel sure, endure. It is God ordained for a glorious purpose. We must never forget that the gospel message we bear to the world is to go forth to the world from this nation. And that gospel mission message can only prosper in an atmosphere of freedom. We must maintain and strengthen our freedom in this blessed land. I have wished, as did President Franklin D. Richards, that we could have a goodly number of substantial young men growing up in our midst who had become skilled and mighty in the law and who could go into any of the courts and set forth the true principles of justice and equity in all cases. We need more of such men. We do not want men to become lawyers, turn infidels, and live for nothing but a little money they can make. We want to raise up a corps of young men, armed with the spirit of the gospel, clothed with the holy priesthood, who can tell the judges in high places what the law is. We have allowed our courts, through their anti-prayer, anti-God decisions, to outlaw in the schools the positive beliefs and truths contained in the Declaration of Independence, the very foundation of our nation. I am so grateful for the establishment of our new J. Reuben Clark Jr. School of Law here on this campus. Here students can be taught the gospel truths, the eternal truths about laws and government. This school can wield a mighty influence for good throughout this great nation and this sick, messed up world. It can send forth a group of faithful, courageous, Latter-day Saint priesthood patriots who are both able and anxious to do the Lord's will concerning our political problems. Men who really do understand the true meaning and importance of our Constitution. Men who have dedicated themselves to the principles and practices of our founding fathers. But let each of us, whether we are in the field of law or not, strive to follow the counsel of our prophet. Therein is safety. God bless you. And all of us. And may God bless America and preserve our divine Constitution and the Republic which He established thereunder. I humbly pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.